learn something about them, because all Scripture is from God, it is by inspiration, and it is profitable to making our lives perfect. And so every individual listed in there has a reason for being in there. Now, last week we discussed, as we were going through the great adventure, we were talking about the judges, and I told you, and we weren't going to look at all the individual stories in the book of Judges. It was basically what the problem was during the book of Judges. But tonight I decided that the character would be on something during that time frame to kind of link the two lessons together, and we're going to talk about Samson this evening. Samson was a very colorful character, to say the least, right? He's one of those guys you look at and you just kind of become conflicted about him, because you can't quite figure out what made him such a great man of faith just when you look at it on the surface. He was filled with weaknesses. He was filled with flaws. He really kind of in some ways made David look pretty good. And David is usually the guy that we look at and say, man, he was full of flaws, and yet he was able to become what God wanted him to be. And, you know, he was not, I mean, when we look at Samson, and granted we don't have a lot recorded about what Samson did. I mean, he judged for 20 years in Israel, and the Bible doesn't bother to really record for us anything that took place during that particular time frame. But what we do see, he's not a particularly godly man until the end. Now, he does kind of redeem himself. He might, you know, there might even be a lesson there that even up to the last moment of your life, you know, you can give yourself to God and make a difference. And certainly Samson is a character that makes a big difference with God at the very end. Well, he was a judge for the first 20 years of a 40-year time period where the Israelites were oppressed by the Philistine people. Now, you know, once again, here we are, we're in one of those valleys. Remember, we talked about last week that they did what was right in their own eyes, and as a result of doing what was right in their eyes, instead of doing what was right in God's eyes, God would send in a group of people, a nation, one of those nations they were supposed to have removed from the land most of the time, and he would oppress them until they cried out to him. Samson was also contemporary. As we tie other stories together, he was contemporary with the last 20 years of the high priest Eli's life. Now, we know that within that time frame as well, we come across some other Bible characters. In fact, the judge that will succeed him, and that is the young Samuel, would have been alive and probably seen or at least heard or known something of the exploits of Samson. Samson was born to a woman of the tribe of Dan. His father was named Manoah, and his birth was announced to his mother by an angel. Now, it seems that as you look at the text and you look at this announcement, that the mother seemed to be more of a person of faith than the father. The father basically said, you know, because God has now appeared to us, or God has spoken to us, God's going to kill us. And the mother's like, no, he's not going to kill us. So she seems to have a little better grasp of things spiritual than Samson's father did there at the announcement by the angel. Now, the angel also made clear that Samson would be a Nazarite from birth. Only three people in scriptures are recorded as Nazarites from birth. Samson, someone contemporary with him, Samuel, and then in the New Testament, John the Baptist. Now, you ask, what is a Nazarite? And by the way, I hear sometimes people say, Jesus the Nazarite. Do not ever say that. That is not accurate. Jesus was not a Nazarite. He did not partake, or he did not take the Nazarite vow. We know that. The establishing of the Lord's Supper would have been a violation of the Nazarite vow, because he used fruit from the grape, or juice from the grape. And that would not be allowed for a Nazarite. Jesus was a Nazarene, because he was from Nazareth, but not a Nazarite. A Nazarite vow was a person could not drink wine, could not drink any juice from the vine at all. He was not allowed to even touch grapes, or even the skin or a seed of a grape. I mean, it was that strict in regards to those things that could become fermented or alcoholic in some way. They were not to have anything to do with that. They could not touch it in any way or drink of it in any way. They were not to have their hair cut. That was a part of the Nazirite vow. You know, we often wonder, well, why did God choose hair? Well, hair was a part of the Nazirite vow. It was to let your hair, that a razor does not come to your hair. So when we think about John the Baptist probably had some pretty good hair. Samuel had some pretty good hair, probably. And certainly we know Samson did as well. He was not to have a razor come to his head ever. Another thing, and this ties into the story with Samson, is that a Nazirite was to never come into contact with something dead. Specifically dead bodies of people, but also anything dead. He was not to come into contact with that, or he would be unclean. There would be an entire process that he had to go through as a result of having done that. Well, Samson's hometown was near the Philistine border, and undoubtedly brought much contact with the Philistines. And the Philistines raided the villages that were there in the tribe of Dan. Well, let's stop just right there before we get into Samson. Let's talk about the Philistines for just a moment. Philistines are people that we hear a lot about in the Bible, right? We know that, you know, different ones were Philistines, and David was always fighting Philistines. You have Goliath, who was a Philistine. I mean, Philistines are constantly brought up. They are the people that God seems to use time in and time out to be able to punish them, to be able to cause difficulty for Israel. And you know, Saul will fight them. David will pretty much bring them close to an end. But they will continue to be a problem for the Israelites for pretty much all the time until they are deported into captivity. Well, the Philistines are not actually a native people to Canaan. They are not Canaanites, as, say, the Perizzites or the Amalekites or some of them were. They are not Canaanites. They are not native to the region. But instead, they were Greek. We believe that they are seafaring people, maybe Phoenician in origin, having come from the Greek islands or the islands around Greece there in the Aegean, and that they came here and they settled all up and down the Mediterranean coast, and they even functioned in city-states. And we know that from our history, our world history about Greeks and their city-states, Athens and Corinth and Sparta and all those different places. They were city-states. Each city ruled itself independently, but they worked together as a kind of semi-nation in defense and in military actions. And so you have these five cities. You have, and I'm going to try to get them all here off the top of my head. They're Ashdod and Ashkelon, Ekron, Gad, and Gath. And so you have those five major Philistine cities, and they operate as city-states all up and down the coastline of Israel. Well, one thing that made the Philistines stronger than the Israelites, and this is really key for them, is that they knew how to work iron. I mean, they even would give the Israelites certain iron implements for farming and things of that nature, and then would charge them enormous prices to take care of it. That was a part of the oppression that they brought down upon them, but it also gave them a real tactical advantage when it came to battles, to fighting. And, you know, we see this Greek background here of this people, and yet just a few centuries after this time, it is going to be metallurgy that gives the Greeks the difference, is the difference maker in the Greeks and their great conquering of the world under Alexander the Great, their ability to work bronze and to make armor that is light enough for our men to wear and to carry, and shields that would give them, make them a power in the world. And yet here it is again, at an earlier stage, that the Philistines, with that same knowledge, are able to bring themselves against Israel and prevail, and always prevail, it seems, without God's help. We see Philistines as far back as Abraham, but by the time we reach this point in history, they are fairly strong in the area. Well, Samson was a physically strong man, yet he was a weak man morally. He was a weak man in regards to self-control. I mean, he just seemed to, you know, he just seemed to cast his eyes on different things, and he just didn't think about consequences or anything else, and just went right out, just had no kind of self-control whatsoever. But even with his many failings, Hebrews 11 and 32 lists that he became a man of heroic faith. I mean, he makes it into Hebrews chapter 11. As much as I might say that he had all these failings, something there pleased God. And, you know, he certainly, at the very end, looked to God and gave his last breath serving God. when Judges chapter 14, Samson became attracted to a Philistine woman from the village of Timnah, which was only 5 minutes from Samson's town of Zorah. So, you know, like I said, he had a lot of contact with these people. They weren't very far away. And we saw last week in our lesson about the judges and that God commanded them not to intermarry with the Canaanite people. And yet here is Samson, God's judge, and the first thing we see him doing is trying to marry a Philistine woman. God very clearly at the beginning of the book of Judges, do not marry these people. Joshua, do not marry these people. Samson sees him a Philistine woman, I want to marry her. Right away we see his weakness and his lack of self-control in this very fact. You know, Samson is ignoring a command and pursuing a pagan Philistine woman, but not only that, he's not just marrying some Canaanite woman, he's not marrying some Amalekite or some Perizzite or some other type of Canaanite person. He is trying to marry a woman that is a part of the very people that right now is oppressing them. The enemy, for lack of a better term. So that's not going to go over well with other people involved in this either. Either on the Philistine side of things or the Israelite side of things. Samson's father reluctantly arranges for this marriage to take place. And even though these events are contrary to God's will, God uses these events to create a confrontation between Samson and the Philistines. And this is kind of really what I want us to see in this lesson tonight, is how God works. I mean, you can look at this story about Samson and talk a lot about Samson, but really it's how God works. How God can take someone as lacking as much self-control and take even those actions that come out of that lack of self-control and use them for His purpose. That He actually takes Samson's weaknesses and He uses those weaknesses to bring confrontation between Samson and the Philistines, which is what God wants to begin with. He wants Samson to be in opposition to them. He wants confrontation between Samson and the Philistines so that he might destroy them, as he's going to do a very good task of hurting them very badly at the end. Well, on his way to visit the Philistine woman, Samson came across a lion. And you know, that might be scary to some of us, but obviously not to Samson. As Samson takes and he kills that lion with his bare hands, literally just ripping it apart, demonstrating his strength. So, as a Nazarite, he just not only killed it, but now he's had his hands on something dead, right? He's not even living up to his Nazarite vow in regards to that. Well, he visited the girl, and on his way back home, he saw that bees had established a hive inside them and produced honey. So Samson scooped honey from inside the dead carcass, once again, something dead. And not only is it enough, it's not enough that he touched it, now he's going to eat out of it. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, I like honey, but I do not want honey from the carcass of a dead animal. I don't care how sweet it tastes, if I know where it's coming from, I don't want it. In that regard. And that's what he does here. And then, you know, not only does Samson eat this honey that's out of this dead carcass of this lion that he killed, but he takes it home to mom and dad, gives it to them, and the Bible clearly says, and he did not tell them where it came from. Why? Because there were laws prohibiting things like that in regards to things that were dead. And so he did not tell his parents that he had gotten it out of a dead lion. Well, he then went down and had a feast and prepared for his marriage, which was the custom. And during this feast, he gave his famous riddle, right? That riddle that he gave to the men, the Philistine men that were obviously, you know, did not like Samson very much. And so Samson says, I'll give you a riddle. And, you know, if you can get it, I'll give you this. And if I get it, or if you don't get it, then you have to give me this. And the riddle goes, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. Right? Right out of a, you know, just the recent events in his life, he gets his riddle. Well, the men could not answer, and for 3 days they tried to come up with an answer and could not answer his riddle. So they go to his wife-to-be, and, you know, there's some technicalities there and exactly when in this feast they would actually be married or whether they were actually married. We're not really sure. It's kind of unclear because Samson seems to think that they're married. And yet the Philistines do not seem to think that they're married. But anyway, he says, they tell her, you either tell us, you get him to tell you the answer to that riddle, or we'll kill you and your father. I mean, they're just laying it on the line, aren't they? We're not going to lose this bet. You get him to tell us. So she came to him with her little puppy dog eyes. She said, Samson, you hate me. Oh, no, I don't, honey. Oh, yes, you do, because you won't tell me the answer. You hate me. Now, and Samson doesn't want his wife to be to think he hates her. Oh, this is just going to, you know, this right here, this moment is a problem that he's going to deal with again, isn't it? The ability not to stand in the face of the temptation of a woman. And she says, you hate me. And she cried. I say that, but I got to give him some credit. He held out. For 7 days. Let me tell you what, this girl, she's not giving up. Of course, her father and her life's on the line, but 7 days, every time she saw him, she cried. And she just see, you know, Samson was, and she starts to bawl. Finally, Samson, I guess, just couldn't take it anymore. And he told her what the riddle was. And so the men came and they told him, there's nothing sweeter than honey and there's nothing, you know, more ferocious than a lion. That's the answer to your riddle. And Samson said, listen to this. Ladies, this is not me. This is Samson saying this. If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not know the answer to my riddle. I know how you got the answer. The only one place you could have got the answer. You got it from my wife. Somehow you coerced her. You plowed with my heifer, and you got the answer. Now, you know, a new wife, I don't think new wives would really like being called a heifer. I don't think any person would like to be called a heifer. But yet, Samson calls her that. Well, Samson then attacked the Philistine city. He got a little angry, and he seemed to have anger issues as well. He attacked the city of Ashkelon. That's one of those five city-states that I mentioned to you just a moment ago. He killed 30 men and took their spoils. And, you know, he didn't give it out of his own treasury. He went and took the spoils of 30 men that he killed and then gave that to those guys in response to paying up on the bet. And so he paid them, and then they gave her, the woman, to another man. Well, you think you'd learn. I mean, the guy just went and attacked one of your cities single-handed, killed 30 men, brought you their stuff, and now you're going to do something else to make him mad? So they give his wife to another man. Samson caught then, and we know this story very well, he caught 300 foxes. He's quite agile, isn't he? He caught 300 foxes, and he tied a torch between each of their, two of them. He'd take two of them, and he tied a torch between their tails. Of course, they're both trying to run away from the torch, but they're tied together, so they're just going to kind of do a kind of crazy run all throughout these fields. And he sets the torches, and he sets them loose into the grain fields and the vineyards of the Philistines, burning much of their fields and many of their vineyards with this tactic. And they know exactly who did it. And they blame the girl and her father, and they burn them to death as a result of Samson's actions. Well, the Israelites, while the Philistines blamed the girl and her father and killed them, the Israelites do the same thing with Samson. They blame him. They blame him for bringing the Philistines against them and bound Samson to hand him over, and he allowed it because he made them promise. He said, promise me, I'll let you give me to them, but you have to promise me that you will not kill me. So they said, we won't kill you. So they bound him up, and they hand him over to the Philistines. And he goes there, and the Philistines came, and they took him. And it says that Samson broke the ropes like they had been burned and were just ash. Just snap. He's loose. And that's a bad thing. Because then he picks up a job of donkey, and he kills 1,000. 1,000 men single-handed with the jawbone of a donkey. He was quite the warrior. And he killed them. And Samson then, the Bible tells us, judged for 20 years. But obviously, at the end, toward the end of that 20 years, we don't, like I said, we don't have anything really recorded of what Samson did during that time span. But his old flaws and his old problems came back to get him again, obviously toward the end of that 20 years, because Samson's lack of self-control brought him into trouble again. He was in the city of Gaza, another Philistine city, and he met a harlot prostitute named Delilah. And he was stricken with her. Just like the other Philistine girl, once again having problems again. You know, the other girl, it does not seem that he committed fornication with her. The Bible seems to make clear that he did not. But yet he did commit fornication with Delilah. And the men tried to shut Samson into the city when they found out he was there and that he was with Delilah. They decided, we've got him trapped now. We'll keep him in the city. And Samson came to the front gate of the city, literally lifted the gate right out of the ground and out of the walls, and tore it out of the walls, and carried it 30 miles and set it on top of a hill. Basically to say, you can't keep me in. He was a man that was very brash and very quick to put on a display. Well, you know, I don't understand. As long as I've ever heard this story, going back to when I was a small child, I don't understand Samson from this point forward. You know, I've known some people that I thought had very poor judgment. Just didn't seem to get it. Now, I know we've all met people like that, that you just, you know, you look at them and you see the things that they're doing and why, and there's just no rhyme or reason to why they do the things they do. And you know, if Samson was being deceived and it wasn't clear that he was being deceived, there was a lot of subterfuge involved, or you know, it was clear that, you know, he wasn't seeing what was going on. You might say, well, that's one thing. But folks, he's seeing clearly what's going on here. And he just doesn't seem to get it. Because Delilah then, as a result of the Philistines coercing her, she doesn't seem to be all that faithful to them, but they're coercing her with riches, she begins to deceive him. Oh, Samson, once again, oh, well, won't you tell me your secret? You know, don't you love me? So he tells her, if I'm bound with new ropes, right? If I'm bound with new ropes, then my strength will be gone. And so Delilah, they tie him up in new ropes, and she cries, Philistines are at the door. Snap. He just breaks out of them. Okay, right there. You know, the old fool me once statement. Okay, right there. You can forgive that one, right? Okay, you know, he didn't know she was going to bring the Philistines out, but I'm sorry. If you wake up bound in the ropes that you just told her would make you powerless, you need to think, she told on me. She brought them here. You know, that's what should get there, right? Doesn't seem to faze him. Doesn't seem to be the conclusion that Samson draws. So Delilah comes again. Samson, tell me what the secret of your strength is. You know, you can just hear it. Don't you love me? He says, if you bind my hair with 7 locks, right, and put a pin in it, then that will take my strength. So, Samson must have been a sound sleeper too, because I'm telling you what, I don't think somebody could tie me up or bind my hair. Of course, you're not going to get too many locks out of my hair. But, you know, I don't think you could do those things without waking me up. Anyway, 7 locks, pin through the hair. Samson, the Philistines are here. Jumps up, pulls the pin. Nothing seems to be bothersome. Able to repel the Philistines. Now you go, Samson, Samson, Samson. Don't you see it? No. Not at all. Samson, what is the secret to your strength? Tell me. Don't you love me? If my hair is cut. Oh, why did you say that? You know, if you're watching, I remember watching a movie one time at a theater, and there was a bad guy. He was in with all the good people, and they didn't know he was a bad guy. What he had done was in secret. And they walk up and they hand him a gun, and the entire theater goes, oh, because they know. And you know, if you're seeing this in a movie, you just got to believe the whole audience will go, oh, He told her. He told her. Didn't he figure it out? They cut my hair. So he tells her, and his foolishness was great. And they come in, and she shaved his head. Once again, sound sleeper. She shaved his head, and they come in, and they take him, and he has no strength. And they gouge his eyes out. Samson is now blind. He's not only weakened now, but he's now had his eyes gouged out. And yet God will use this great foolishness that Samson did in telling her to bring about the greatest victory that Samson will have in his life. Out of failure. You know, it's just a great symbol that as terrible as our failings are at times, and how we hurt our lives and we are so foolish sometimes with our lives and we have great failures that lead us into sin, God can take those failures and He can turn them into something great, can't He? He can change our lives. He can give us a new direction. And He's going to take this terrible failure, but yet it's going to provide an opportunity for greatness. Door that God's going to open to Samson. They probably took him, we believe, probably to the city of Ashdod, to the temple of Dagon. We'll see Dagon a little bit later at another temple. When Dagon is, they put the Ark of the Covenant. I love that story. They capture the Ark of the Covenant when Eli dies, and they bring the Ark of the Covenant, and they set it like a trophy before their idol god, Dagon. And they come in the next morning, and he's laying over in front of it, almost like he's bowing down to it. So they stand him back up. He's over again the next morning. Next day they come in, after standing him back up, he doesn't have any feet anymore. You know, you're not going to put him back up now. He's down. He's down for good. Then God struck the city with a plague, and they decided they didn't want to keep the Ark any longer. But they take him to the temple of Dagon. Don't know how many people were there. We do know, without a doubt, that it's more than 1,000 that are in this assembled area. And they put him between two columns, and Samson prays to God for strength once more. But what's interesting is Samson doesn't pray really to please God. He wants revenge for them gouging his eyes out. Even at the last moment, you still kind of have this, Samson, what are your priorities? But he still looks to God. And obviously his priorities were, to some degree, focused on God as well. And God gave him the strength to take those pillars and to cause them to fall, bringing down the temple. And why I say we know that there were at least 1,000 people in there is because it says that Samson killed more in death than he killed in life. And we know he killed 1,000 with the jawbone, right? So we got a hard and fast number right there. I guess we go ahead and we get add the 30 at Ashkelon that he killed. So at least, there was at least 1,031 in that building because he killed more in death than he did in life. Does that mean, you know, as I thought about that Samson did more in death than in life? Maybe so. He finally seemed to do what God wanted him to do. And that was bring real retribution upon the Philistines. To smite them for their idolatry. And in that moment, he was exactly what God wanted all along. So many times before, it seems that God had to just kind of take what he could get with Samson and use it. But here he had his chance. The door was opened. And in his weakness, God put him just in the right place. What can God do? If He can do that through Samson, what can God do with you if you dedicate your life to Him? What can He do with a life that's completely dedicated to Him and given to Him? If He could do that with someone like Samson, how much more can He do with you? I don't think we give God enough credit, do we? Of what He can do and what He can accomplish in us, through us, in this world. No, you're not going to be able to grab pillars at some stadium and yank them down. That's not what I'm saying at all. God opens great doors for us. If only we have enough dedication to walk through them. He gave, Samson had a door here and he took it. and it was the last door he would ever take. You know, Samson may also be one of those guys that you kind of look at and you say, man, he got it right at the last minute. And that was pleasing to God. You know, God just says to find him before you die. Samson did. Moments. He really found the faith that I think God wanted from him for so long in those last moments. What can we do? Trusting in God, we can do anything. For our God, with God, nothing is impossible, Gabriel told Mary. And folks, that's still true today. Nothing has changed. God does not change. He's no different than He was in the New Testament or the Old Testament. He's the same God. He wants to work through us and with us. He wants us to be His people and us be Him be our God. And He will do great things. This evening, if you're not a child of God, we hope and pray that you'll make the decision to become one for no other reason than to please God. Not for what you can get out of it. He'll give you salvation. But really, that you come to God because He deserves your allegiance. He deserves your service, your worship, and you giving your entire life to Him. Come to Him. Believing in Jesus Christ, repenting of your sins, confessing Jesus, Son of God. Be buried in baptism and have your sins washed away to walk a life given to God. And oh, what a difference He will make. If you're a child of God, maybe you've forgotten like Samson did from time to time. Kind of forgotten that, you know, he really should be more focused on God, not these things of the world. Like Samson got so enamored with at times with the Philistine women. Maybe you've forgotten that He's really where you need to turn to. May it not take you having your eyes gouged out and taken prisoner to come to realize that. May you come back to Him tonight. If we can assist you in any way, won't you come as we stand? As we sing. Oh, we'll do.